picture that statue of Lady Justice. Lady Justice, I'm not an expert in any way. I just read about this recently. Was one of the four virtues, known as one of the four virtues in Greek mythology. And it's one of the best known images of the American legal system. So Lady Justice is considered one of the best known images of the American legal system. And many other countries use this personification, so to speak, of their legal systems as well. So you might remember that this statue or image is an allegorical personification of what is supposed to be, or what should be, the moral force in our judicial system, in our court system. And like I said, many countries, like America, use this personification to depict a fair, unbiased, just legal system that allows due process and then supposedly swift punishment if someone is found guilty. So there are three of these statues of what is known as Lady Justice at the Supreme Court building in Washington, D.C. But if you're able to picture her, this statue or image, then you should have remembered or thought about some of her attributes, such as a blindfold. So she's always depicted as blindfolded. And then also she's always depicted as holding a balance or a scale, as some people would call it. I think it's called a pan scale or a balance scale. And she's holding that up. And then also a sword. So those are the three main things that all images in one form or another of this personification known as Lady Justice will show: blindfold, a balance, and a sword. Now, the blindfold is supposed to represent objectivity. In other words, our justice system is supposed to be blind to everything except for the facts. So what are the true facts, and what is truly going on here? And that way, justice should be meted out objectively. So there's no fear. There's no worry that for some reason the court is against you, or you don't have favor of the court. No worry about money or wealth or power or partiality, because this blindfold is representing the court system as impartial. And then in her left hand, the Lady Justice holds the balancing scales, which is supposed to represent the weighing of evidence. So just the facts. For and against, one side for, one side against, and whichever one holds true or weighs the most, then they know, based upon the merits of just the facts, then that's how the decision would be made. The sword is always supposed to be in the accurate portrayals of Lady Justice underneath the scales, because it says after all the facts have been weighed and we know the truth, then this sword, which represents the authority to melt out punishment, then it can happen swiftly. So after the due process, then this is what's supposed to take place. So we know that that's a wonderful idea. Whether or not it's true can be debated in many ways, I'm sure. But I want to focus on just one of the three aspects of Lady Justice, and the scales. Now, there's many different types of scales that are available. We know that in the news right now, there's the situation with the statues in various places that people find offenses and they're pulling them down. And Valerie and I, she showed me, somebody posted on Facebook, a weight scale like you might step on at the doctor's. Now, I never liked those anyway. I had my keys, my wallet, my shoes on. I stand there. I'm always heavier at the doctor. No wonder they're always telling me to lose weight. But anyway, now I can't remember the joke about the scale. It's something about this statue offends me. Tear it down or something like that. But I understand the reasoning behind that. But scales, of course, the scales that are depicted there, the idea of that comes, a lot of this, of course, is pagan, but it comes from Egyptians, and scales were used even before them, but that scale, that idea of weighing what's true or what's right, because the Egyptians had depictions of When a person dies, their heart is weighed on one side of these scales, and the feather of truth is weighed on the other side. And if they're equal, that means you go to the good place. And if they're not, then you don't go to the good place. But we recognize that the Greeks had similar things. The Romans had it. But these types of scales have been used in many, many ways. The ancient monetary system, I'm going to go through just a little bit of this, not a lot of details, but for centuries, millennia, international trade flourished. And one of the ways that it was able to do that is that they developed an international monetary system, primarily with gold and silver. And when they went to make trade or do business, they didn't count out money. When I was thinking about this, I think of Valerie because she carries this change purse with her, and we're at the store. And I'm glad she does this, but you know, most people today use their cards when they go through the checkout line. And here we are, and she says, 83 cents, I've got it. And she opens her purse, and she's going through there, and she's counting out money. But they didn't do that. They didn't count out the pieces of gold or silver for a long time. What they did do was they had an established system of weights. And so they just weighed the amount. It didn't matter if you had one piece or 10 pieces of gold. What mattered was how much did it weigh? And they had a system. And a lot of the ancient people or kingdoms used the same system. And even the ones that didn't had a conversion system so that it was supposed to be extremely accurate. But they used these types of scales. I find it interesting that they would bring their own scales and they would each weigh it to make sure that it weighed what it said or what they said it should weigh. So they didn't count it out. They just did this weighing of the amount so that they would know the true value. So stamping coins and things of that nature came much later. So literally for centuries and even millennia, they used this system of using a balance scale like you'd see Lady Liberty holding in order to know the true weight or the true value of something. So make a transition with me here and turn to Daniel chapter 5. You might remember this event in Daniel. There's a movie that uses this, a similar quote to what we're going to read in Daniel. It came out, it seems like a long time ago, but one of the bad guys in the movie, the bad knight, had just lost the jousting match, and he's laying on his back, and he's had been knocked out, and he's coming to his senses, and the good guys in the movie are coming over and looking at him one by one, and they go through this this saying where they say, "You have been weighed, you have been measured, and you have been found wanting." So you have been weighed, you've been measured, and you have been found wanting. And that's what we read here in Daniel chapter 5, verse 24. So Daniel 5, verse 24, you'll remember this, I'm sure, where it says, "Then the fingers of the hand were sent from him," from God, "and this writing was written." And this is the inscription that was written, "Many, many tinkle euphorson," and this is the interpretation of each word. "So many, God has numbered your kingdom and finished it. Tinkle, you have been weighed in the balances and found wanting." And it goes on to talk about your kingdom will be divided. And of course, Belshazzar died later that same night or that same evening. So God is telling him that he had been weighed and he has been found wanting. So we understand that when this is said in that way, you've been weighed, you've been measured, you've been found wanting. It's not saying that he was too thin. So he didn't get on the scale and you're found wanting. You need to eat more, work to gain weight. I can remember when we were first married, so we have our anniversary coming up, and I weighed 145 pounds. And I could eat anything, and it didn't matter what I did. I had to work to put on weight. And here it is 27 years later, and I have to work to take off weight. It's funny how life changes. But we know this guy, it's not saying when he was found wanting that he was too thin. It doesn't mean that at all. If we go back a little bit here in this chapter, verse 22, he had just gone through about Nebuchadnezzar humbling himself, admitting that there was a God. Verse 22, it says, "But you, his son, Belshazzar, have not humbled your heart, although you knew all this." He knew everything that his father went through and how his father was humbled and admitted that there was a living God. And he says, "And you've lifted yourself up against the Lord of heaven. They have brought the vessels of his house before you. You and your lords, your wives, your concubines have drunk wine from them, and you've praised the gods of silver and gold and bronze and iron, wood and stone, which do not see or hear or know. And the God who holds your breath in his hand and owns all your ways, you have not glorified." So when we put all this together, we recognize when it says you've been weighed and you've been found wanting, it's talking about his character or his lack of good character. He wasn't humble. He wouldn't humble himself. Even though God worked dramatically with his father, Nebuchadnezzar, Belshazzar would not humble himself. In other words, there was absolutely no honor in this man. There was no honor in this man. There was nothing to look at him in respect. After being weighed in the balance, his attitude, his heart, his way of life, God understood and knew this man did not measure up to anything that was of value. And so there was no honor in this man. So that's what that is talking about, or what that is telling us when it says that you've been weighed. And you do not measure. You've been found lacking. So the title of today's sermon, Give Honor to Whom Honor is Due. So I went around about, so to speak, way to get to it, and looking at a situation that's saying you've been weighed in the balances and you've been found wanting. And because there was no honor in that man. God knew that. Now, when we think of the word honor, as we go through the sermon today, I want to make sure that we understand, to be able to understand honor and to give appropriate honor is an important spiritual principle. It's an important spiritual aspect. It's an aspect of God that all of us should understand and all of us should emulate. But when we think of honor, what comes to mind? What does it mean? We honor our veterans with a day of recognition. We have various ways of honoring people. And basically, if you look at a definition today, it's just a term that shows how we evaluate someone. Do we honor them or not honor them? Do they deserve our honor? Should they be honored? So we look at someone and we should be able to understand or to evaluate by their way of life or things that they have done, by their actions primarily. Do they deserve honor? Should they be honored? So we look at it in that way, and we should understand when we talk about honor, we are talking about respect. A proper reverence, if that's necessary, like honoring God, a proper respect, a proper way of viewing someone. And let's look at it from a biblical view. That's what I want us to do today, is look at this from a biblical view and understand the importance of honor. It is a spiritual principle. And I don't mind telling you that I started down the road of preparing this sermon because I gave a sermon in Clarksville recently, and I quoted the scripture in Peter that says, "Husbands, honor your wives." And I started thinking about it. Well, what does that mean? And what does that look like? Because if today, if we honor someone, if we honor people, a group of people or individuals, what typically do we do as a society? How do we honor someone? I don't know if any of you follow the NBA. I don't really, but I do. When it gets to the championship, I'll watch a little bit or follow it to see who wins. And this year, it was Golden State who beat Cleveland. And one of the players, Kevin Durant from Golden State, happens to come from a small town in Maryland. I don't remember the name of it. But they won the championship. He was the MVP and all this kind of stuff. So they said they were going to honor him by having Kevin Durant Day. And they had a parade that he was the guest of honor in, and all these kinds of things. I don't know what all they did for him, but that was one way that they were going to honor him. And humans in our society today, if they honor someone, typically it's because of it's something outward, whether it's athletic ability or fame of some sort. People would give certain honor. If you see movie stars going down the red carpet and people want their autographs and take pictures of them and want to be close to them and all those kind of touch them, all those kind of things. And so we see those things going on. Sometimes it's wealth. People have a certain honor for that poor lady up in Massachusetts who just won $700 million in that lottery. And I say poor because I bet her life is going to get pretty confusing quickly, if it's not already, that much money. But people honor her. How many people, you don't have to hold your hand up, I'm not accusing any of you, but how many people who play that lottery think, wow, I would love to be her? Now, they honor that in that way in their minds. So they go through these things, on whether it's power, wealth, athletic ability, and grant honor in that way. But to honor someone, to truly honor someone, in a biblical sense, it means to give weight to that person. Now, that's typically not a term we use where we say give weight to that person. You know, to me, when I think about that, it sounds like you want me to carry your suitcase or something. You know, give them the heavy thing. Let them carry it. But if you understand, especially in the Old Testament, the word, almost every word that's translated honor in the Old Testament, translated into honor in English, comes from the same word, and it literally means something that is heavy or weighty. That's what it literally means. But figuratively, it means to give weight to someone. And in that sense, it means to give them, to grant that person respect, to see their value, and to grant them a respect, to grant them favor, to grant them what we term in English honor, to grant them a certain privilege in a sense, in your mind, how you think of them or how you treat them. So that's what it's referring to. When we talk about honor, it's talking about having a proper respect, and especially if it's in regards to authority, and a proper value and understanding of the value of that person. So that's what it's referring to when it says in the Bible, when it's talking about to give honor. It means to give favor, to view them as someone who is worthy of certain attention, recognition, and respect. And it should show then. So we have these thoughts, or maybe we could call them feelings, internally, but then it does show outward. When we honor someone, it should show outward. So it's not just something we think, it's not just something we feel. Truly to honor is something that is shown outwardly. And it's important that we recognize, of course, that honor can and should be granted on the basis of character. So how many of you would have honor if you had to win an NBA championship to be honored? Of course, not me. So I don't think any of us. You get the point there. Or how many, if you got a degree, you can only have honor if you have a degree from an Ivy League school, not just a degree, but an advanced degree, and then also a doctorate, and then you can receive honor. Well, no, that's not how it works. Honor can and should be granted on the basis of character. Honor should be based on God's perspective, on what God values. Honor should be based on God's perspective and on what God values. So yes, it is an internal attitude of respect and courtesy, but then it shows outwardly appropriate actions. Let's turn to Romans chapter 13. You may already know that this is where the title of the sermon comes from, this section of scriptures, Romans chapter 13. Starting in verse 1. Romans 13, verse 1. Let every soul, in other words, every living person, be subject to the governing authorities. For there is no authority except from God, and the authorities that exist are appointed by God. Therefore, whoever resists the authority resists the ordinances of God, and those who resist will bring judgment on themselves. So he's making the point here that we submit accordingly to our local governments, state governments, federal governments, and that God allows them. God sets up governments. God takes down governments. God puts people in authority or allows them to, as the case might be. And so he says, don't resist it. Don't fight against it. Verse 3, for rulers are not a terror to good works, but to evil. In other words, if you're a good human being doing what you're supposed to do, then you shouldn't have a fear of if the police pull you over. You shouldn't have to worry about that. Now, we know it doesn't always work that way, but that's the point Paul's making. He says you shouldn't have to fear. Rulers are not a terror to good works, but to evil. Do you want to be unafraid of the authority? Well, then do what is good, and you will have praise from the same. In other words, if you don't want the IRS coming after you for money you owe to them, pay your taxes. Then they're going to say you're a good citizen in that regard. So do what is good. Verse 4, for he is God's minister. Now he's talking about serving. So God put them in the office, and he's saying that when it's the word here for minister is serving, they're servants, and they should be doing it to you for good. So we're blessed in America. We could talk all day long. I don't want to, by the way, but we could, about how the government wastes our tax money. But at the same time, if you travel internationally, like Mr. Franks was showing there, we have a wonderful road system. And we go to the grocery store, and guess what? There's food there. And not only that, there's a market that controls prices. We can debate that as well. But we are so blessed here in what the infrastructure that we have in this country and things of that nature. But the point he's saying, you do what's good. They're serving. They're here to serve us for our good, to keep control, to keep law in check. But if you do evil, if you're breaking the laws, well, then you should be afraid, as it says. For he does not bear the sword in vain. So just like Lady Justice talking about that there is a power that has the authority. So if you break the speed limit, you might get a speeding ticket. There's the sword. So he doesn't bear the sword in vain. For he is God's minister, an avenger to execute wrath on him who practices evil. Therefore, you must be subject, not only because of wrath, but also for conscience sake. In other words, don't just obey laws so that you don't have punishment come down on you. Do it because it's the right thing to do. Do it for conscience sake. And I'll put this just in a little bit of a caveat, put in a little caveat here. We all understand in talking about this, we obey man's laws until they tell us to disobey God's laws. So who do we obey, God or men? Well, we know we put God's first always. But he's going through these things, so he's not saying that they're telling you to break God's laws. They're right laws that cause societies to have law and order. So he says, do it for conscience sake. For because of this, you also pay taxes, for they are God's ministers, attending continually to this very thing. Render, therefore, to all their due, taxes to whom taxes are due, customs to whom customs, fear to whom fear, and that's a proper respect when it's saying that this word fear, and then honor to whom honor is due. So here's that term, to give honor. Honor to whom honor is due. So we see that in society there are certain people that we give a certain honor to, and if we understand the concept as Christians of this honor to these people in context of this section of scriptures, right, it's telling us to be good citizens, to recognize that there are laws and we are to be good citizens of the society that we live in. So that's what it's referring to. But it is a biblical principle. Giving honor to whom honor is due is a biblical principle. And it's important that we understand that, that we understand what honor is, and that we are striving to give honor appropriately. Because not honoring, when it is appropriate, not honoring is disrespectful. It is disrespectful. Now let's turn to Romans chapter 1. We could have gone to Timothy, where there's a list of how humans will act in the end times. We're familiar with that list, and we certainly see it being fulfilled all around us. But notice this list here in Romans chapter 1. So these people who have denied God, in verse 22 it says, professing to be wise, they became fools. And we recognize that. For this reason, in verse 26, it says, for this reason God gave them up to vile passions. And then it goes on from there, verse 28. It says, and even as they did not like to retain God in their knowledge, God gave them over to a debased mind to do those things which are not fitting. What is fitting? He tells us later. We just read it. If you're a citizen, you strive to be a good citizen. You strive to do what's right, to do what's good, to honor properly, give honor to whom honor is due. These people, the vast majority of society, they don't do that. So they do what's not fitting. Verse 29, being filled with all unrighteousness, lawlessness, sexual immorality, wickedness, covetousness, maliciousness, full of envy, murder, strife, deceit, evil-mindedness. They are whisperers, backbiters, haters of God, violent, proud, boasters, inventors of evil things, disobedient to parents. And of course, we know the commandment, which we might touch on later or in another sermon, honor your mother and father. These people are disobedient to parents, undiscerning, untrustworthy, unloving, unforgiving, unmerciful. Then it goes on to verse 32, who, knowing the righteous judgment of God, that those who practice such things are worthy of death, not only do the same, but approve of those who practice them. You know, here we have these people that don't, they basically, when you read through this list, and we understand that they live lawless, they live according to how they want to live. They decide for themselves right and wrong, but they don't want to give anyone honor. They don't want to give anyone honor. They want to live however they want to live without recognizing who deserves honor, even their parents. No, that's a very direct commandment. Honor your mother and father. And it says they're disobedient. They don't. So when we look through this, it's a sign of just a disrespect of a very important biblical principle. It's a disrespect and a sign of depravity, a depraved mind, when we look at how these people live. Turn to Proverbs chapter 30. So that's a contrast to how Paul said Christians should be, living in a way that we truly give honor to whom honor is due. That we're able to recognize, we're able to understand it, and we're able to apply it. This spiritual principle of giving honor to whom honor is due. So Proverbs chapter 30. Verse 11 through 14. And again, this talks about disobedience to parents in verse 11. It makes that point. So this generation, or these people that he's referring to here, there's a generation that curses its father and does not bless its mother. There's a generation that is pure in its own eyes, verse 12. Yet is not washed from its filthiness. There is a generation, oh, how lofty are their eyes, and their eyelids are lifted up. And then verse 14, there is a generation whose teeth are like swords. Is that ever truer than today? Now, I still like to think of myself to some degree as a young man, but I've never, in all my years, seen anything like what we see on TV. I can't even watch news anymore because they talk about one thing and then they have 12 people on and they're all spewing their own opinions and what they want you to think and what they want you to believe. And it's like their teeth are swords. So there's a generation whose teeth are like swords, whose fangs are like knives. And they devour, it says they devour the poor from off the earth and the needy from among men. So again, just reading through these things, we recognize that there is a generation, there are people that they want honor. They want honor. And we see small groups of people being very vocal, demanding honor for how they choose to live, no matter what it is. Even if you don't agree with it, they want you to honor them. But do they recognize true honor? And who truly deserves honor? So we live in a time where people want honor, but they don't want to give honor. So we see this all around us. And so it's very, very important that we recognize that we're able to acknowledge, we're able to recognize it. Let me start there. We're able to recognize someone who deserves honor. So we're able to recognize it. We're able to acknowledge it. And then we're able to act upon it. So we can recognize it, we can acknowledge it, and we can act upon it. In that sense, if somebody is deserving of proper honor, whether it's from their authority, now there's a proper honor. I don't know why I keep using this example, but there should be a proper honor that we have for our police officers. It should be natural. You know, they are there to help us. Their jobs are so difficult. I think about this sometimes. I just wouldn't want that job for a number of reasons. But they're just put in very difficult situations quite often. But there should just be a natural honor for their authority of keeping law. That's the idea behind it, keeping law and order. So there should be a natural honor that we can recognize it, we can acknowledge it, and then we can act upon it if we have an opportunity to be face-to-face and questioned or whatever it might be by the police. We can show respect. So many of these things that happen on the news where a police officer shoots someone or whatever, and I'm watching this, and I think if that person just cooperated, won't solve every problem, we know that, but how many problems would it solve? If they just acknowledge, you're the authority, you have a reason for this, and I'll recognize that, and I'll honor you appropriately. How many problems could be avoided? But to get away from that, I just want us to remember this and understand this from a biblical standpoint, because it is important that we honor those who deserve honor. So we have to be able to recognize it, acknowledge it, and then act upon it to show proper respect and worthiness. To have, if it's honoring God, of course, to have that proper reverence. If it's honoring a person, then it's to honor them as God wants us to honor them. So yes, we think about it. We should have thoughts or feelings or emotions, but it's an outward manifestation that God wants to see. And we know that God talks about honoring human beings, many because of their way of life. They obeyed God, and because of their obedience, God honored them. God sets us the example. I will just look at one specific example, but you know, we could turn to so many people, whether it's Joseph or Moses or Joshua or Daniel. They obeyed God. God recognized it, he acknowledged it, and he acted upon it. He gave them proper honor. And Psalm chapter 8, in Psalm chapter 8, just a couple of verses. A Psalm of David. David's praising God, worshiping God. And in verse 4, he says, "What is man that you are mindful of him? What is man that you are mindful of him, and the son of man that you visit him?" And when you consider how low we truly are, how nothing we are compared to God. And I can't help but think of this almost every time I'm on the beach and I see all those, grain of sand. I couldn't remember if it's a pebble, a kernel, it's a grain. See all those grains of sand and how small they are under our feet, or if you're sitting on the beach, under something else. But you know how small it is. And we're so much smaller than that to God, how great God is, how perfect God is, so insignificant. And yet, as David's saying, what is man? And what is man that you are mindful of him? Verse 5, "For you have made him a little lower than the angels, and you have crowned him with glory and honor." God has given us honor, human beings. By the very fact, we know this to be a fact, we are created in the image of God. Male and female created he them in the image of God. We are created in the image of God. That's part of the honor we have. And it goes on to say, "For human beings, you have made him to have dominion over the works of your hands. You put all things under his feet, all sheep and oxen, even the beasts of the field, the birds of the air, the fish of the sea that pass through the paths of the sea." So David's acknowledging God created us, and he's given us honor. He created it just lower than the angels. We know that at this time. We'll be greater than the angels when we're spirit beings, part of the God family. But now we're just lower than the angels. And we have this great purpose. Now, human beings get this all complicated and confused. So there are so many people that love animals more than human beings. When one of the places where Valerie and I were in Kenya, we traveled, walking in the Masai Mara, where the wild animals are. So we traveled with a man. One of them had a rifle, one of them had a shotgun. And that's to protect people coming through. We were walking, and that's to protect people from the wild animals. And he said he's only had to shoot two animals at the time. He'd been there for 7 years. One was a warthog that was charging them, and one was a hippo. But he was telling me that when the hippo was charging them, the lady that they were walking through this particular area actually jumped on him and did not want him to shoot the hippo. And he said he had to act fast, and he had to knock her away, because he had to kill the hippo. Hippos are the most dangerous animals in the world. If you didn't know that fact, they kill more human beings than any other animals every year. So he had to shoot the hippo. Hippos are not gentle. They're not kind. They are cantankerous, and they're just mean animals. So anyway, she was more concerned about that animal than the human beings. And we see this around us. People become more concerned about the earth. Now, unfortunately, we know people abuse animals, people abuse the earth in ways that aren't good, but then people take it to an extreme. And God says, you have the honor. You are crowned with this glory, first of all, the potential that humans have, but you have dominion. We have, human beings have dominion over the works of God's hands. All things are put under our feet. And so God has given us, God has crowned us, it says, with glory and with honor. So we recognize that God set human beings over the works of his hands. We recognize that God created us in his image, and God created us with the potential of being in his family. So when we say God applies this principle of honor, let's understand what it means. When he created human beings, he acknowledged then the value. He was able to acknowledge it, recognize it, of course, and acknowledge it and act upon it. The value of this creation of his, to be his children. God's bringing many sons to glory. So he gives us the honor that he has given us as human beings. And people call us animals, and whether you've been to a zoo or in whatever situation, like in the savannah, and we see, it seems like, thousands of baboons. No, we are not animals. Those are animals. They act like animals. Sometimes humans can act like animals, we know, but God has created us to be over the things, his creation. So we understand that. So I just wanted to bring this out because God has set us this example of being able to recognize and acknowledge and then act upon it properly. So God recognizes our value. He gives us honor in this way. He recognizes our worthiness. And it's such a wonderful, wonderful blessing. And what a loving God that we have. So I want to take, I'm planning to do a series, and we'll look at other ways that honor applies to Christians and how we need to apply this principle. First of all, I just want to make it clear, we should certainly understand and know this, that we are to honor God. 1 Timothy chapter 1. First Timothy chapter 1, verse 17. 1 Timothy 1 and verse 17. Where it says, "Now to the King eternal, immortal, invisible, to God, who alone is wise, be honor and glory forever and ever. Amen." And so to God, be honor forever and ever. Revelation chapter 5. We're just going to look at a few of these scriptures. There's plenty more that you could look up if you wanted to later about honor, proper honor of God. But I'm going to go through a few scriptures and then three principles. What does it look like if we honor God? So Revelation chapter 5, verse 11. We'll read verses 11 through 13. Revelation 5, 11 through 13. "Then I looked, and I heard the voice of many angels around the throne, the living creatures and the elders. And the number of them was 10,000 times 10,000 and thousands of thousands." In other words, there's so many, I can't put a number to it. There's just a lot. So that's what he's saying. "And they were saying with a loud voice, 'Worthy is the Lamb who was slain.'" And so Jesus Christ, "Worthy is the Lamb who was slain to receive power and riches and wisdom and strength and honor and glory and blessing." So we recognize Jesus Christ is worthy of honor. "And every creature which is in heaven and on the earth and under the earth, and such as are in the sea and all that are in them, I heard saying, 'Blessing and honor and glory and power be to him who sits on the throne and to the Lamb forever and ever.'" And so again, honor. There's an obvious honor. There should be. We should be able to acknowledge it, recognize it, acknowledge it, and act upon it accordingly. And then John chapter 5. So pausing just for a moment, if we go back to that list that we read in Romans chapter 1, now I'm not going to turn there, just refer to it, but if we go back to that list, those people, they just refused to acknowledge God. They refused to honor God. You remember, they just decided they were going to live however they wanted to, as we see around us today. They want honor for how they live. They don't want to give honor. And so they just refuse it. The Bible makes it so clear. We know this. God deserves honor. We must be able to recognize it, acknowledge it, and act upon it. Verse 23. So John chapter 5, verse 23. Verse 23 says that all should honor the Son just as they honor the Father. He who does not honor the Son does not honor the Father who sent him. So there's no doubt about it who it's referring to. God the Father and Jesus Christ. It is our responsibility as Christians to understand this. Now, this is the easy part. I think all of us can understand this. I think all of us will say, yes, I recognize God deserves honor. I acknowledge it. And I want to live that way. I want to show God honor. So we know it's a biblical principle. How do we do it? There's more ways than this. If you take time to study, you can come up with many ways. But I'm going to give you three ways all of us should be and can be honoring God. Psalm chapter 50. But Psalm chapter 50, verse 14. Verse 14, where we read, offer to God thanksgiving. Offer to God thanksgiving and pay your vows to the Most High. Call upon me in the day of trouble. I will deliver you and you shall glorify me. Now, so if we do this, it says, you shall glorify me. Verse 23, whoever offers praise glorifies me. And to him who orders his conduct aright, I will show the salvation of God. Some translations in both of those, verse 23 and the other verse where it says, glorify me in verse 15, some translations will say honor, to honor me. So if we are offering to God thanksgiving, if we're paying our vows to the Most High, and we recognize this is talking about our prayers. So if we are honoring God, if we're recognizing how kind he has been to us, how merciful, how patient he is with us, how much he has given us. I try to say this in my prayers every day. I don't think I always do, but I try to give God thanks for life. He's the life giver. Life comes from God. He's the creator. And if we don't have life, if we didn't have life, that's what we would have. Nothing. If we didn't have life, we would have absolutely nothing. So what a wonderful blessing it is to have life. And certainly one of the ways that we honor God is by giving thanks to God. So when I've given sermons about prayer and praying, I've never told anyone you should pray. I don't think so. Anyway, I better say it that way. I don't think I've ever said you should pray 30 minutes every day. So there used to be a general rule that the church would say, and whether some ministers would say 30 minutes, some minister might say an hour, whatever it was. Every day you should do this. But there are certain things that we should be doing in our prayers. Number one, we should be praying. The Bible's very clear. Matthew 6, it says, when you pray, not if you fall in a well and need help, but when you pray. So we are to be praying, and thanksgiving should be a huge part of our prayer. When we recognize that everything we have comes from God. The blessings of this country in which we live, how great we are blessed. How greatly we are blessed. The homes we have, the clothes, the food. That's why, as I pointed out previously, that we give thanks for food. So the example in the Bible is when Jesus prayed before a meal. What did it say he did? He gave thanks. He acknowledged where the food comes from. So you might work, you might have a garden, you might till the soil and plant, and it might spring forth fruit, and you bring it to your table and eat it, but you better be thankful to God for it, because he's allowed us to have that. You might work and go out and buy a good steak and bring it home and cook it and enjoy it, but God has allowed us to have it. God is our provider. So we recognize this. So the point of I was making about prayer is that every let me guard my words here. Think of how I want to phrase this. A part of our prayer should definitely be thanksgiving. Giving God thanks, acknowledging God. So for doing that, then we are truly recognizing that God deserves honor. We recognize it, we acknowledge it, and we act upon it. We are giving God honor. So that's what these verses are saying that we read here in Psalm chapter 50. We honor God with praise and thanksgiving. So again, in the where it says, "You shall glorify me," some translations will say, "You shall honor me." And so we recognize whoever offers praise. Verse 23, whoever offers praise glorifies me or honors me. That's a very direct thing each and every one of us should do. And we can recognize that we have needs and certainly pray for our needs and pray for God's blessings and things. We certainly do that. But it is very important, if we are giving God proper honor, that we give thanks and that we give praise. Proverbs chapter 3. So this is point number 2 in how every one of us can honor God. So Proverbs chapter 3. Very direct statement. Proverbs chapter 3, verse 9. Proverbs 3, verse 9. Honor the Lord with your possessions and with the first fruits of all of your increase. Of all your increase. So honor the Lord. Honor God with your possessions. With the first fruits of all your increase. Now, this is something that we see in humanity and society. There's a term that we even use about a self-made man. And when somebody has worked, they've developed their talents and abilities, or they've cheated and stole, or however they did it, but they've gained their gain, their treasures, whatever it is. So they think, look at what I have done. Of course, we know that's what Nebuchadnezzar did before God struck him down and humbled him. But that's what they're going through. Look at what I had done. And so God said, you know what? Be aware of this. If you recognize, if you understand who God is, so if we recognize that he deserves our honor, if we recognize that, if we're able to recognize it and acknowledge it and we value it, then we're going to, as it says, honor. We're going to respect God, and we're going to, as it says, honor him with the possessions, with our tithes, with our offerings, as is appropriate. And there's other ways to do it as well. We can get into at another time. Other ways with our possessions that we honor God by being hospitable, by being kind to those in need and things of that nature. Now, we have a challenging situation in our society today as far as honoring God. If we have, part of a reason we have is to share with others. It should be. All of us should be able to share with others, whether that's inviting people over for meals or helping people in times of need. But it drives me bonkers to see so many people out begging. And I think, how can I help these people? One man was standing there with, we know in our area there are certain places where they put tents up during the winter, and they have propane tanks, and they have burners for heat and to cook on and things. And a man was standing on the corner with his propane tank, and I thought, how can I help him? I'm not giving him money, because what's he going to do with it? Who knows? But I'm not going to give him money. So if I have water bottles in my car, I'll offer him that, or something of that nature. And I've also recognized certain charities in the area that will help people. So if they truly are in need, I give them numbers, phone numbers, or I even offer to call. I've done that before. But offer to take them to fill up that propane tank, or offer to call. Every time I've done anything like that, I've always been denied. What do they want? They want my cash. No way. There's plenty of programs. If you're in need, we can do something to help you. Okay, that's my little going off course for the moment. But talking about honoring God with our possessions, one is by helping people who are truly in need. And of course, we do that by paying taxes that the government then uses for programs to help people who are in need. But this is something that all of us can and should do. Honor God with your possessions and with the first fruits of all your increase. So if we truly recognize who God is, we acknowledge it, we value it, we will honor him with our tithe and with offerings. Psalm 24, still under point two, Psalm 24 and verse 1. There are several scriptures in the Bible that make this point. I think in 1 Corinthians 10 it says it as well. But here in Psalm 24, verse 1. The earth is the Lord's and all its fullness, the world and those who dwell therein. For he has founded it upon the seas and established it upon the waters. And so the earth is God's, all of its fullness, everything that's there. Everything. Everything is God's. So when we understand this and we talk about tithes and offerings, we're not saying God needs our money. We all should understand that. Now, in Isaiah, God's saying, what can you do for me? Really? Now look at my universe I've created. You're going to build me a house? God doesn't need our money. It's part of our worship. And it's part of how each and every one of us should honor God. Everything's already his. What we have, he has allowed us to have. And so we honor God by giving back. We honor God by giving back our tithes and offerings and in other ways from what he has given us. And then point number three, Isaiah chapter 29. Isaiah chapter 29, I'm going to read just one verse in this chapter, verse 13. Therefore the Lord said, inasmuch as these people draw near to me with their mouth and honor me with their lips, but have removed their hearts far from me, and their fear toward me is taught by the commandment of men. So then he goes through what's going to happen to people who do this. So understand the point that I'm making for point number three, because he's saying, you know what, just lip service, it's not enough. There's a lot of people who say they're drawing near to me. There's a lot of people who give lip service to being Christian. It's not enough. So point three in honoring God is do what you know to do. It's an aspect of honoring God. Make it a part of who and how we are. We recognize that conversion is the change of our hearts. And so our hearts have to change to where we want to obey God. There has to be this appropriate obedience. So if we go through this concept of honor again, and think about this for a moment, if we are able to recognize who God is, if our mind's been open to the truth, we can recognize who God is. So we recognize who God is, we acknowledge who God is, and then we value it. And so we want to honor God by obeying Him. If you love me, keep my commandments. And God makes it so clear. And we read in Psalm 50, I'm just going to refer to it, go back to it just a moment, because we're in verse 23 when it says, "Whoever offers praise glorifies or honors me. To him who orders his conduct aright, I will show the salvation of God." It's a theme of the Bible. We're not legalists. We're not under the law, except for as God commands us to be. That's because we love God. We want to honor Him. Then we're going to strive to obey Him. We want to obey Him. We want to order our conduct aright. In other words, live according to God's laws and God's ways. So honor is truly a biblical principle. And understanding what it means to honor, it's part of the foundation of who and how we are. God sets the perfect example. He says He has honored human beings. He gives example after example of honoring those who have obeyed Him throughout the Bible. So it is part of the very foundation. It should be a part of the very foundation of who and how we are. It is very significant in the Bible. And we'll continue this series, but we've gone through three ways how every one of us can and should show proper honor to God.